Hey, stories from the East and West fans. We are delighted to finally bring you the last episode of season 4. But we have some sad news too. This will be the last episode of the Stories from the East and West podcast created by this team.
It's been an amazing journey, exploring seemingly small stories that ended up greatly influencing the world around us. Our episodes have taken us to the sandy beaches of German lakes, through the land of shoes in Czechia, all the way to New Zealand and back.
With the war raging in Ukraine, we are reminded how important the events happening in this part of the world are in a global context.
With love from the core team, Wojtek, Piotr, Monika, Nitsan, and myself, wishing you a great listen. So, for the last time, hi, I'm Adam.
And I'm Nitsan.
And this is Stories from the East and West, telling you little-known stories from Central and Eastern Europe that changed our world.
This episode you're about to hear was scheduled to be published a few months ago, but after the Russian invasion of Ukraine, we were absolutely devastated and put the show on hold.
Now, around 6 months into the war, we've decided the episode has become very relevant to what's going on in Eastern Europe these days. It's about freedom and the right of every nation to autonomously decide their own destiny, their own language, and own identity.
Before we begin, as the team at Stories from the East and West, we want to say that our hearts go out to all the people affected by this utterly incomprehensible act of violence and aggression. We encourage you to continue supporting Ukraine in any way that you can.
And now, it's time for today's story.
Zlín, Praha, Warszawa, Madrid, London, Paris, New York, Casablanca.
Where you see a kind of totality of the human presence.
Absolutely, absolutely. That is exactly
what
Stories from the Eastern West. This story was stuck in the head of our producer Wojciech for a long time.
Hi. This is how my crush on the Baltic countries began. It was back in 2007. I was studying law and I had a class in international law with a professor who was famous for telling otherworldly stories. One day, he gave a fiery lecture on how international law is slow but ultimately just. An example he gave was Estonia, Latvia and Lithuania, aka the Baltic countries.
And why those three countries?
Well, because they were all unlawfully incorporated into the USSR after World War II. And vanished from the map as independent states. Second of all, they were subject to pretty ruthless and systematic Russification politics, which pushed them to the brink of completely losing their identities. But they persevered, advocating for their cause, and pulled off one of the most unheard of protests in world history, which meant they actually managed to regain independence and peacefully. But let's start from the beginning. The Russification. I spoke with Andres Tarand, the former Prime Minister of Estonia, and the historian Red Vilik, who told me all about it.
It was changing the language in schools and all going to Russian.
We felt that there was no freedom to say what you really think. Everything was so strongly restricted. We wanted to make lots of changes. How we raise our children in the kindergarten and what they are teach. Do they have to sing about the Lenin and the Communist Party, or do they can just sing about their sun and summer and bird singing like it's maybe more normal in the childhood if you are a small child?
It was as we are losing now our language. It was not first time.
You see, these nations are so small that they live in constant fear of disappearing. And this fear, it's real. It's backed up by numbers and history. For example, the proportion of ethnic Estonians dropped from 88% before World War II to only 61% by 1989. For an empire like the USSR, it wasn't that much of a big deal to swallow up a tiny country. It just had to be in the mood. The last time they tried was in 1939.
Finally, the day came. Like a good murder mystery,
No one had guessed how it would happen. Molotov and von Ribbentrop got together, and the Nazis and communists signed a pact. It was a betrayal by the communists, and the world was plunged into war.
That pact is well known in Poland. It secretly partitioned the country between Nazi Germany and the USSR. But what does it have to do with the Baltic Trio?
As much as the pact was made public pretty early, there were secret protocols to it, which the USSR denied existed. Red explained it to me in detail.
When I was young, we were never told about that pact, and the Soviet power didn't want to say that actually it was an occupation. They told always that the Estonians joined Soviet Union voluntarily, that it was the wish of the so-called working class. But at the same time, if you talk to any Estonian, then they wonder who were those people who were demonstrating at the president's palace and shouting that we want their freedom and we want to join the Soviet Union.
A little disclaimer here. Since Estonia is so small, Estonians say that every Estonian is either a neighbor or a family of another Estonian. So if no one had the slightest idea about who these protesters were, the ones advocating for joining the USSR, it's pretty clear they had to have been sent from another country.
Of course, we knew that it was an occupation, but as nobody told officially about the document which proves it. So that's why it was so important to prove to the world and to our people and to Moscow and to all the people in Russia to understand that actually it was occupation.
Proving that incorporation had been planned even before the war became a matter of to be or not to be for Estonia and the other Baltic countries.
Organizations abroad, they tried to keep the idea of Estonian Republic alive all those 50 years there abroad. And that's why they spread the word about the secret protocol.
One of the activities of those emigres was organizing events around what was called Black Ribbon Day, the anniversary of the signing of the Ribbentrop-Molotov Pact. The events were meant to remind the public about the pact and convince the unconvinced that the secret protocols did exist. Since 1989 marked the 50th anniversary of the pact, people in the Baltic countries decided to go big. They would make a human chain that would cover 675 kilometers and link all three capitals, Tallinn, Riga and Vilnius.
For those not into metric, that's around 420 miles of people holding hands.
It's impossible to wrap one's head around, given how poor the means of communication were back then and how strictly society was controlled. However, I was lucky enough to meet a few people who actively participated or even were instrumental in organizing the whole thing.
My name is Ulo Lonoja. In the time of regaining independence, was active in Popular Front and as a result of all activities reached first parliament after the independence of Estonia.
Popular Front was the Estonian oppositionist party that was advocating for Estonian independence from the USSR and for democratic reforms. They were the main organizer of the Estonian part of the Baltic Way. The other person I got to sit down with was Red Vilik, who you heard from earlier.
Hello, my name is Red Vilik. By the profession, I am a historian. I was very active in the women's movement. It was called Estonian Women's League. So it tried to attract women to be more active in the politics.
Red is an example of how socially and politically active the societies of the Baltic countries had become by the late 1980s. After years of fear and intimidation, people wanted to take things into their own hands. Red and her colleagues from the Women's League thought that the male-dominated opposition leaders were so focused on the big issue of trying to slip away from the USSR's influence that they were forgetting about other important matters, such as education and healthcare.
At the same time, we were very active in the so-called big politics. Several women from our organization were elected as a member of the Estonian Congress, which was like parallel parliament at that time, at the end of the Soviet era. I was the member of the Estonian Congress too.
So all these very politically active people started plotting something big. The Baltic Way.
And who came up with it exactly?
That remains a bit secret. Because that's not documented, and no one remembers who first said loudly, let's do such a thing, a human chain connecting three capitals.
But the weakened state of the USSR in the late 1980s made it seem like the right moment. Andres Tarand, the former Estonian prime minister, felt it very acutely.
Nobody knew how it happens, but the feeling was that someday it could be possible. That the situation as it is now, the time to do what you can. Because here our experience is that it is not very long to have these happy days.
There was not even a question not to participate, because I understood that either then or never, Estonia can be free again.
We still wonder how it's possible that everything happened, because actually we had Russian troops, we had red Soviet passports, and the more it's in the past, I think that the Soviet power from Moscow, they had enough army and military and all the other KGB and organizations just to stop all this movement.
The main concern among people who were planning it was security. How would the KGB react? Would they interfere?
With KGB it was a bit funny. They were just waiting. There was not clear commands from Moscow, Glasnost, etc. And they didn't know how to react, actually.
It soon turned out that there was massive support. Thousands of people were eager to join, even if on the surface they supported the communist regime and the USSR.
Police really was helpful to arrange the traffic. So the only thing we were afraid is the intervention from the side of Russia. We didn't afraid much our own people, because all the directors of enterprises, collective farms, they were all members of Communist Party, definitely, but the majority of them supported.
People from those regions who were not close to the route of the Baltic Way were brought by buses. So even from the islands came people on the buses because they wanted to participate, and it was necessary really to have so many people that you can keep hand in hand all these hundreds of kilometers. So it was really something which is probably the biggest public event what has happened if we don't speak about the Song Festival grounds where we see thousands of Estonians altogether.
That song festival that Ed just mentioned was another incredible public demonstration that the people of Estonia managed to pull off. We covered it in an episode titled Kaie, that's K-A-I-E. Essentially, they got rid of communism by singing national songs. We'll put a link to the episode in the show notes.
Okay, back to the story. So Wikipedia says that 2 million people took part in the Baltic Way. How is it that you make 2 million people congregate on the same day in a huge line covering 420 miles? And all of this without the internet and mobile phones?
Well, it turns out it takes 700 people to cover 1 kilometer. The total population of these countries was a bit more than 7 million. The demonstration engaged almost a third of the countries combined, including children and the elderly.
The main task was done locally by organizations, or many of things were done by direct contacts with persons.
Ulo went on to tell me how they basically had to organize groups of people knocking on doors, attending smaller meetings and gatherings to make sure the information reached every factory, every school and community. It grew like a snowball.
I think it was because of the people were so active and belonged to all different smaller or bigger organizations.
In arrangement of Baltic Way, Estonian radio played also important role. Because they started broadcast about preparation of way and situations in the places earlier. And they also reported where are the empty places, etc. Estonian radio and Estonian TV were fully supported all the process of independence. We were about 10 people who were drawing the plans and trying to locate the people. But from the very early days, it was quite clear that this route is simple to cover. And on the days, so the first part from Tallinn, there was 3-4 lines of people, much more than we expected, actually.
And then the great day came.
We were the lucky ones to have a car. We thought that we will drive to Rapla, which is 55 kilometers from Tallinn. My husband's family lived there. And our plan was that we will stay all the family together, all the brothers, sisters with their children. But actually, the traffic was quite slow because so many cars and buses. And on those pieces of the route where there were enough people already, the cars were just stopped and asked, please move further. Maybe there is lack of people. And so we didn't reach Rapla, but we exactly remember the farmhouse at which we were stopped and told that if it's possible, please come out. Here is a lack of people. It's practically on the halfway to our destination. So all 30 years, when we pass that place, somebody from the car says, oh, this is the place we stood in Baltic Way. So it's really so important that we remember that. And then we follow, oh, look, they have new roof. Oh, they have overpainted the house. On the example of that farmhouse, so we see how life changes and goes better and better in Estonia nowadays. At that moment, I think nobody of us was afraid anymore, because if you have so many people who are so excited and full of positive emotions, then you are not afraid. But to tell the truth, several times we were afraid, but it was on the women's meetings and protests when we were just maybe 50 or 100 women standing with our children besides. And then we thought, from which window the KGB is taking photos and what will happen to us in the future. So these were the moments, but not in the Baltic Way.
Imagine you're standing in a human chain, somewhere in the middle of nowhere. And you know that there are 2 million people like you doing the same, that the feared KGB and the communist regime can do nothing or very little to stop you all. Isn't that powerful? One of the people who on that day, for the first time, felt that anything was possible was Ive Sildnik, a vivacious teacher from one of Tallinn's schools.
There was not any question, or maybe I go, or maybe not. No. Of course. Maybe it's danger. Who knows? Because Soviets, tanks, they was here. It was clear. I go. There have to be motivation inside you. And we had it. Everybody, Estonians, wanted freedom, independence, and that the Russian army go out.
Another person I talked to, Ivi Gubinska, told me how she took her father-in-law with her. This wouldn't be at all surprising, except that he was Russian and part of the army that had invaded.
И мы пошли тогда домой. И следующее утро Он читала по русским газетам и эстонским газетам.
It was only the day after that he fully realized what had unfolded the day before. He had dismissed the idea with a wave of his hand and said Ivi had no idea how immovable the USSR and the Iron Curtain was. But eventually, after 1991, he became a proud Estonian citizen, and Ivi says he was even one of the first to take the language proficiency exam in Estonian.
Rett has a very vivid memory of one particular moment from that day.
An American car passing. Man was driving. It was an open car without the roof. And the lady was holding the camera, and they were driving very slowly along the road and constantly filming. And I never forget the face of the man behind the wheel. It was just as much surprised as it's possible at all.
The Baltic Way was a protest of unprecedented form and scale. While it was almost impossible to pull off, it also seems like the only way those little nations could have opposed to USSR, by uniting and showing that they weren't afraid, not intimidated by the giant that had thwarted them for the past 45 years. How can you not fall in love with something like that?
The next day we definitely looked what will come from Moscow, and there was an angry reaction with definitely false information that just a minority of nationalists are there. Tens of thousands or so, that was a clear number to replace 2 million.
We thought that is it really possible that it happens now, but somehow each small step which you took, and if no violence came after that from the Soviet side, it made us more and more brave. We took the next step, and so finally the independence was restored. But of course, there was no 100% guarantee that it will happen or that it will happen so quickly. But here is a nice example from my family. In 1991, at the day when the independence was restored, when we watched the TV how the Russian tanks were intelling, and the situation was really critical and we didn't know what will happen the next hour. And I was standing in front of the TV and almost crying. And then came my son, who was at that time 13 years old. And he looked at me and told, "Mommy, don't cry. If we don't happen to do it this time, our generation will do it after 10 years anyhow. Don't cry." So he was so sure, because they had seen for 3 years already how we fight and how big is the wish in the people's hearts to be independent again and to say that we live in the Estonian Republic, not Soviet Socialist Estonian Republic. We wanted the old, our grandpa's, our grandma's Estonian Republic back.
This episode of Stories from the Eastern West was brought to you by Culture PL, the flagship brand of the Adam Mickiewicz Institute. It was hosted by Adam Zhuavsky and me, Nitzan Reisner. It was reported, written, and scored by the one and only Wojciech Oleksiak.
This story was produced in collaboration with Fabamu Museum in Tallinn. Many thanks to Maya, Lisa, Anton, and KU Telve for connecting us with the Baltic Way participants.
And if you want to learn more about the Baltic Way, the show notes have lots of links for you and can be found in your podcast app or on the Stories from the Eastern West website at sftew.com.
And that's it. This is us, your hosts, signing off for one last time. Thank you so much for listening and supporting us during these four seasons.
We really loved making this show over the years. We learned a lot making it, and we hope you learned a few things with us along the way.
If you still want to drop us a line, you can still reach us over at our Twitter and Instagram accounts. Both are at SFTEW Podcast, no spaces.
Thank you all again for listening, and especially those of you who shared the show with others, as well as those who reached out to us and let us know how you felt about the show. And maybe we'll see you elsewhere in the podcasting world. You can already catch Wojtek on the award-winning podcast, The Europeans, so check that out for sure.
Well, time to say bye then.
Bye.
Bye.